Hello, everybody, and welcome to John Abbott on the Air for CKUT 90.3 FM. Joined by Daniel and Susan, I'm Dusty Goldberg. Over recent years, there's been a surge in the popularity of vegetarian diets, vegan diets, and other dietary plans that don't include meat. This eruption has sparked a conversation throughout society today. Is a diet that contains meat more or less healthy than one without meat? To get a consensus of what people believe simply based on common knowledge, we interviewed students at John Abbott College to see which of the two they thought was healthier. Here are the responses we received.
I think that a vegetarian lifestyle is better because animals are horribly mistreated. People are forced breeding animals and hurting them, which I think is obviously very not good. If you look at the example of cows, people are overbreeding them and even just mistreating them, but also just cows in general are not bad, and the fact that we're overbreeding them for hamburgers and to eat tasty food like that isn't very good. Their farts are producing a lot of emissions that are hurting the planet a lot, so I think that overproduction of different animals like that is actually harming our planet, and so I think that overall people should have more plant-based diets.
I think a diet that involves meat is more healthier because there's other options that you can match with the meat, like vegetables, that also still makes it a healthy meal. And meat still provides you protein that helps build up your muscles. So people that go to the gym can't live off of a vegetarian diet because there's not enough protein for them to build up muscle.
So in the long term, having a vegetarian diet is very good for your health. It could decrease very chronic diseases like high cholesterol and heart diseases, etc. But people stay away from vegetarian diets because they think that's going to get you lack of protein, which is a lie, because foods like vegetables, milk, and meat alternatives have that amount of proteins. Just like fish, eggs, tofu, etc.
I think a regular diet with meat would be greater than a vegetarian diet. I feel like when you go on a vegetarian diet, you're lacking protein. I don't know, of course you got beans, you got peanuts, you got all sorts of tofu, all sorts of other sources of protein, but you're missing the true what chicken has to provide, what fish, what beef. You're missing those key contents of protein. I feel like that's a big part of a diet. Of course, if you're just eating more vegetables, on the vegetarian diet, there's more benefits there, but you could still do that on a regular diet. You don't have to cut out meat to just eat more vegetables. That's not how it goes. I think if you just include more vegetables and have a healthy balance of protein in it, I feel like just a regular diet with meat would be better.
The feedback that we got from our John Abbott peers was varied. Daniel and I then met with Samara Lasner, the on-site nutritionist at St. Ronnie Schwanster Academy. We asked her the same question, and this is what she had to say.
This is an interesting question because technically they're both healthy. For example, a diet containing meat means you have a higher chance of having high cholesterol. But on the other hand, it also means you have a much higher chance of having good levels of iron in your blood. So when choosing the kind of diet you want, it really doesn't matter if you're a meat eater or a vegan. It really depends on your personal preference and the choices that fit your lifestyle, and it's largely about balance. So you can eat meat and still have a lower cholesterol and enough iron and be healthy, and by the same token you can be a vegan and you can be very unhealthy. So in both cases it's about moderation and having balance, a little bit of everything.
So it turns out everyone was right, sort of. While there's different benefits of eating a meat exclusion diet and a meat inclusion diet, they're both healthy. But the name of the game is moderation. You can live on either of these dietary practices and live a happy, healthy life, as long as you get the full circle of nutrients that you need. This has been a great learning experience for us, and if you didn't know before, now you do. For CKUT 90.3 FM, John Abbott on the air, I'm Dusty Goldberg. Stay classy, everybody.
Welcome back to John Abbott on the Air on CKUT 90.3 FM. We are your hosts, Jana Tubal
and Alessia Pache.
And we are currently standing in the middle of the Arctic Circle in front of the Herzberg Building. Today, we're going to be exploring the many different classrooms and buildings of John Abbott College. Come with us! In 1971, John Abbott College is known for its large campus and diversified community. The school offers 20 programs and has 7 main buildings. Today, we'll be visiting 6 of those buildings and giving you a brief history of each one of them, as well as even joining some of the classes in these buildings. Let's go! Welcome to Stewart Hall, named in memory of Mr. and Mrs. Walter Stewart, benefactors to McDonald College. This is the home of many students, few classrooms, the cafeteria, and the bookstore. Let's go take a peek in the cafeteria. As you can tell, it is very hard to hear your own thoughts in here. Come on, let's visit one of the classrooms in here, the psychology of well-being.
So if any of you are thinking like, oh, what, I don't know what I'm gonna do, embrace it instead of being be stressed out by it. This is your time, I mean, really, I guess throughout your life, we could always switch hats, but this is especially a moment where we can switch hats, discover, think of ourselves a little bit more than, other people.
That was a taste of the complimentary course, The Psychology of Well-Being, taught by Julie Hank, PhD in Neurological Sciences. Let's move on to the next building. Welcome to the Science Building, also known as Anne Marie Edward Building, or simply just AME. Anne Marie Edward was a John Abbott graduate who died alongside 13 other innocent women in a mass feminicide that took place at L'École Polytechnique de l'Université de Montréal in 1989. This very important building houses the chemistry, biopharmaceutical, biology, nursing, physics, and paramedic departments. Today, we're going to be visiting the fourth floor, where the chemistry classes take place.
Is what's referred to as the Henderson-Hasselbalch equation. So just showing you flip those to pull up the negative. This allows us to relate the pH of a solution to the pKa of an acid.
And that was Matthew Robert Hatchie, professor of chemistry. And now, we're going to go ask some of his students a few questions.
Hi, I'm Shayan Yamanidizor-Khabi.
Vinay Patel.
Isabel Heger. What program are you in?
I'm in sciences.
I'm a sciences student in John Abbott College.
I am in sciences.
How many classes are you taking?
I'm currently taking 7 classes.
7.
I'm taking 7 classes.
Are you okay mentally?
Somewhat stable.
No, absolutely not.
Yes, I am. I'm actually okay, but I understand that some people are not okay with like 7 classes.
Those were very wise words from a few science students here at John Abbott College. Finals are soon, so let's keep these poor children in our thoughts. Let's move on to the next building.
Welcome to Hochelaga, named after the Mohawk name of the city of Montreal, in honor of Canada's Indigenous people. Hochelaga has many different classes: history, economics, political science, humanities, philosophy, religion, psychology, and so much more. Today we'll be visiting one of the many English classes, which the theme is identity and belongings.
Now we will begin our first game, which is called The Race. The first game consists of a hurricane quickly approaching, and the teammates in each group must help each other complete the race as fast as they can. The race will consist of several different tasks.
And that was a book report presentation in Fiona Stewart's English classroom. On to the next building.
Welcome to Herzberg Building. This building was named after Gerard Herzberg, Nobel Prize winner for chemistry in 1971. If you need to access any student services of any kind, this is where you should go. We'll be visiting the media department on the second floor. Come on!
Express your own voice. You're learning to master your camera and the technical. And so what you'll be producing will be even stronger now.
So why did you choose digital photography as one of your electives?
I always liked to take pictures with my phone. So I was like, oh, you know what? Let's find out a way to make it more like, what's the word? Professional.
What has been your favorite project so far?
I like the project we're doing right now, assignment 4, because I like taking pictures of plants and everything, and the movement assignment was really difficult.
Will you be taking digital photography too for next semester?
No. It is way too time consuming and frustrating. I still like the class though, but I'll take pictures as a hobby now.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
When students are getting graded on their creativity, the more constrictions there are, the more likely they are to start hating what they previously loved doing for fun. How do we avoid this? I don't know. This isn't a problem, reaction, solution, Vox Pop. Next building!
Welcome to Penfield, named after Dr. Wilder Graves Penfield, a famous neurosurgeon. This building houses many different classrooms: English, arts, languages, geography, computer science, engineering, you name it. Today we'll be visiting the Universe of the Arts, where they will be performing a play.
Wash from me the spots of vices unclean, that on me no sin may be seen. I come with knowledge for my redemption, repent with hearty and full contrition.
Universe of the Arts was mildly traumatizing. Those weekly assignments really got to us, so we just decided to not talk about it. That's all for Penfield, for the sake of our mental health. Off to the next building.
Welcome to Tazgrain. Named after Thérèse Tazgrain, an advocate for the women's suffrage movement, this building houses the theater department, the swimming pool, the Adora, and the Zen Zone. It also houses a calculus class that we will be infiltrating today. We will be standing in front of 30 science students with our silly little microphone and recorder for your entertainment. Let's go!
Negative 2 into the function, which is here, right? Negative 2... we get 4 over 4, that cancels, we get -2.
That was Tan Gerber, professor of calculus. And for this next bit, I'm going to interview an unsuspecting calculus student.
I'm Matej Moldovan, and I'm in the science program.
Did math in high school adequately prepare you for Calculus 1?
Not really, because there was some stuff that we didn't see because of the pandemic, and it messed us up.
Is calculus kicking your ass right now?
Yeah.
And have you ever been passionate about math, or do you just do it because you have to?
No, I actually like math. It's the one thing I'm good at, and I like it.
Okay, and it's kicking your ass?
Kind of.
Those were more wise words from a student who is currently taking Calculus 1. Well, that's all of them. Stuart Hall, AME, Hochelaga, Herzberg, Penfield, and Tazgrain. We covered them all, and it's time we part ways. And one more time, this was produced by Jana Dubal and Alessia Pache for John Abbott on the Air on CKUT 90.3 FM. Thank you.
See the clouds are creeping towards the sun.
Hello listeners, this is Catherine Ehlich and you're listening to John Abbott on the Air on CQUT 90.3 FM. Did you know there are over 850 different species of bees living in Canada? Some are social and live in hives such as honeybees, but others, such as multiple species of bumblebees, prefer to live underground in burrows they dig for themselves. These wild bees produce little quantities of honey, but they're essential for the continued flourishing of wild and cultivated crops, as most of the pollination comes from them. Yet in these last years, the number of bumblebees has greatly decreased. Why did that happen, and how can we prevent wild bees in Canada from completely disappearing? I talked with Morgan Jackson, who works at McGill University Lehman Entomological Museum as a postdoctoral researcher, who has a PhD in insect taxonomy and phylogenetics from the University of Guelph. Why are bumblebees disappearing in Canada?
Bumblebees are facing a lot of different threats, one of them being habitat loss. So they don't necessarily have the flowers that they need to be able to pollinate and to feed from. They also are running out of places where they can make their nests, or the places that they would like to make their nests are being disturbed. They're also running into a whole bunch of different diseases and new diseases that are being introduced to them by agricultural systems where we're bringing in bees and ferrying bees around. And those bees are sometimes bringing in parasites and diseases and causing little mini pandemics within local populations of bees, things that they're not used to. And that's that's causing problems for their biodiversity and for them to be able to survive. We're also running out of pollination services, so flowers, we're not having as many flowers around, or the flowers aren't overlapping, and so they may go from having lots of flowers around to having no flowers around and starting to starve themselves. So, and on top of all of that, we've got global climate change, which is continuing to add to these problems, where we're getting flowers blooming at the wrong time and not at the right time for the bees. And so all these different factors are starting to influence them, and we're seeing declines straight across the board across bumblebees.
As the situation of wild bees becomes very pronounced, more and more people are learning about wild bees and their importance for nature. Are you aware of the wild bee situation in Canada?
Yes, I am aware of a bee situation in Canada where there is a shortage of them, and some people and organizations are trying to save or protect them. That's about the extent of my knowledge.
I know that it is a problem and that they are going extinct, but I don't really know much about it and what implications it would have on our society.
I am aware of the situation. I'm not an expert, but I do know that if bumblebees go extinct, that will create a lot of problems for us because they pollinate our fruits and veggies. It's a really big cycle, if they go extinct, so we definitely need them around.
I know that bumblebees are endangered. And it's a really big problem because they help us with food and plants and the environment.
These were the answers Jenabat College students gave me. As the situation becomes more clear, it is important and urgent to act to prevent the extinction of wild bees and preserve their habitat in nature. What are some solutions to the situation of wild bees in Canada?
So one of the things people can do at home is to grow a diversity of different flowers, leaving your lawn to grow and flower and having different types of plants on your property if you've got it, or wherever you've got ability to keep plants going. So keeping some flowers around all throughout the year. You also want to try and keep some habitat around. You know, leaving some of the leaf and bare soil around your yard or your property will allow them to start making their nests and finding a home safely. Something that we're doing here on campus on John Abbott and between McGill and John Abbott is creating these pollinator safe spaces where there's basically bare ground. We're getting rid of the grass, getting rid of the plants, and leaving bare open ground for bees like bumblebees, as well as a lot of solitary ground nesting bees who are also struggling to finally have a chance to find a nest, make a nest underground, have it undisturbed for the winter so they can rest and grow over the winter, and then emerge in the spring and continue the cycle. That is hopefully going to encourage bees to live amongst us.
My name is Catherine Illick, and you're listening to Jenabat on the Air on CQUT 19.3 FM, streaming on CQUT.ca. Wild bees in Canada, such as multiple species of bumblebees, are facing some serious damage from natural habitat loss, agricultural pesticides, and numerous diseases and parasites. You can still act upon this situation, for example, planting diverse flowers and plants in our gardens. It is time to save wild bees and save our future.
Hello and welcome to the Mental Health Hotline. If you're depressive, it doesn't matter which number you press, no one will answer you.
Hi everyone, and welcome back to CKUT 90.3 FM. I'm Isabella Ninchevich with my partner Alex Laney, and today we're discussing John Abbott College's mental health resources. We asked students on campus and an expert's opinion on whether they think John Abbott College has enough mental health resources for students in need. Here are the answers we got.
I personally don't think that John Abbott has enough resources because I know of a few, but most of the time, like, I know that they're fully booked or, like, it's hard to get in touch with people. So, no, I don't think there's enough.
Okay, so personally, I don't think that we have enough resources. It's more, like, to help you find out what you want to do with yourself in the future, and I don't think that they have enough resources for mental health, for psychologists and things like that, or even like to help people get the help that they need for at home if there's at home issues or things like that. So yeah.
I think that John Abbott would benefit from more specific kind of mental health resources, like for, I don't know, drug addiction, or one that's like big with like teenagers is like the nicotine addiction, like people vaping a lot on campus. If John Abbott were to broaden its mental health resources, a lot of students would benefit from it.
Congress has actually already spoken about mental health before. We've had several discussions and ideas on what to implement into the school. We've talked about zones for relaxation, maybe a nap zone, somewhere calm for people to take a rest. Especially because you can't really sleep in the clubs or, you know, just in the hallways. We've also thought about adding other amenities, maybe like a place where people can de-stress, maybe selling, like, you know, those fidget toys. More concrete changes, like adding more psychiatrists, having a mental health, like, we already have a mental health day, but adding more stuff to help people with big problems, such as awareness week for stuff like panic attacks, because a lot of people don't actually know how to deal with panic attacks.
All right, so I believe John Abbott maybe have the services, but don't provide them efficiently enough. For example, last semester, I was not in a good spot and tried to get in contact with a counselor, and it took months before I could see one. And by then, my grades had already dropped. I had already dropped a class that I couldn't follow anymore. So yeah, it was way too long.
And here is Michelle Quaz, the psychology professor at John Abbott College.
Again, so it's about John Abbott services. We do have several services. Specifically for mental health, we have our counseling services. So they, you know, we do have drop-in. I know that there's emergency drop-in and also by appointments. So, but for more details, I mean, they're going to be the ones to have it, but we do offer that service for sure. I don't know if you guys have heard, but there's also a new employee to our mental health program here, and it's a dog. It's Max, the wellness dog. And so he's actually an official employee for Abbott Go, and it's a kind of pet therapy, which is more and more common today. So I thought that was really super cool.
To conclude today's episode, Michelle stated that there are enough resources at John Abbott College for mental health for students. However, the students did not agree. We believe that the reason why students do not agree is because resources that the college have are not advertised enough. For better mental health resources, there needs to be a change in the way that the college presents mental health. My name is Alex Slaney with Isabella Ninchevich on John Abbott on the air, CKUT 90.3 FM.
How I lost myself again, but I remember you.
Today we have a pretty fun topic lined up for you, and I suppose I can ask the same question to you as well. Where do you see virtual reality in about 10-15 years' time? Virtual reality, or VR for those who don't know, is best summarized as another way to watch videos or play video games. The big difference is that instead of looking at a computer or phone screen, you're wearing a fancy device on your head that immerses you in a virtual world. Having worked with a couple companies in the past on various VR titles, I can definitely say that I have an interest in where this technology is heading. By far, the coolest aspect about VR is the fact that it can take you to a completely different place that you couldn't, for example, travel to. Let's say that a person can't afford to travel across the planet and go to a museum. If VR were to become just slightly more affordable, a person could visit the Smithsonian or the pyramids of Egypt and still get to experience those sorts of locations in that way. There's also the aspect that VR is mostly known for, which is video games. It's hard to ignore. There's nothing more immersive than placing yourself in the game to make yourself feel more involved. However, there are still some limitations that are holding it back. To get a little bit more insight on what those are and the possibilities of VR in the near future, I spoke with James Murray of Andromeda Studios, a local indie game studio based in Montreal that's focused on creating VR games.
All right, so the killer app for VR is gaming. I think everyone sort of understands that. I think that's where most of the money is, where most of the investment is, and the reason that the technology is, in general, developing at the pace that it is due to the large market of people that want to have immersive entertainment experiences. I think everyone has sort of a reality, sort of like a 1960s view of, you know, where is this technology going to go, you know, in 10, 15 years? Are we going to be, is it going to be like Sword Art Online, you know, the popular anime where we could, you know, there's the movement is one-to-one. Now, I can't really speak for that. What I will say is that the problem with VR, you know, 4 or 5 years ago was that it was just too overhyped. There was just, it was too expensive. The materials, the software, just they weren't there. And these companies like Oculus and HTC and even PSVR, even though I do think they're a good example of those three, I think they kind of killed the initial wave of excitement because it just, the industry as a whole wasn't ready. And I think people expected too much. You know, they cost $400 to $500 per unit. You know, people don't like clunky controllers. They don't like things attached to wires. It just wasn't there yet. And I think Valve Index is actually the closest we've come to something a bit more long-term. You know, Half-Life Alyx is like one of the greatest, it's a landmark for VR. But I even think, you know, and Xbox and Sony, they haven't really shown enough interest in VR for, I think, for it to really take off. You know, they say their consoles, you know, their hardware is capable, but they backtrack so much. And I think for them, it's like, unless there's, without a doubt, a real need for VR, they're not going to really support it, because PSVR as of right now isn't really on PS5. It's not, they're not really giving it enough attention for it to really take off, so it's left up to these other, you know, smaller companies to pick up the slack. And I think that's why VR has taken such a long time.
But James doesn't just think about VR in the gaming aspects. He also thinks that there are some amazing real-world applications.
The reason why VR is so important is it's really not just gaming. Gaming's sort of like the pioneering aspect of it. You know, we have education, we have medical students being able to use it for, you know, real simulations of what it's like to actually have a procedure. You know, these training programs, they can make such accurate real life representations of what it's like to be in the ER. And I think there are so many cases where creating a stress-free environment to learn will help the transition into the workforce so much easier. You know, there's been studies, you know, that say that these medical students that are trained by VR, they often end up being more accurate than their peers that use traditional methods. So I think, you know, when VR headsets get smaller, they get lighter, they incorporate more features, I think people are starting to notice, because like I said earlier, you know, people don't want wires, they don't want clicking controllers, they don't want, you know, they don't want things hampered down by clutter. They want something that feels like they could actually incorporate it into their day-to-day lives instead of something they show up to their friends once in a while.
There's always going to be certain things that hold technology back from getting to its most perfect form. James attributes that to a couple different aspects.
You know, like VR glasses, for example. Something that can allow for, you know, eye tracking technology, so when the human eye can, you know, create the best resolution possible because the parts of the image that the user is looking at actually adjust to their attention. I think things that can reduce nausea, lag, once these challenges are out of the way, I think VR can really start to take off. And it's really difficult for me to say when that will happen. It's very difficult. It really depends on if indeed the pace that we're at continues, and I think it will. Do I think it'll become a greater source of entertainment than say what we have now within the next five to 10 years? I'm really not sure, but I think things like VR chat, you know, Rec Room, things that allow people to communicate, I think people will start to realize that it's more than just a gizmo. It actually does bring people together.
VR is definitely here to stay. It'll just keep improving. It's just a matter of time of how long it'll take for the improvements to take hold. In my own opinion, and from what I've experienced in VR, there's definitely something here that can really take off. It's just a matter of time and commitment from the big players in the industry, such as Facebook, PlayStation, or even Google and Samsung. Once again, I'm Adam Sheridan. You've been listening to John Abbott on the Air on CKUT 90.3 FM, and I hope you have a wonderful day.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to CKUT 90.3 FM. This is John Abbott on the Air. I'm Evie Stockvis. See you next time.
Now Cara Patties is on a fast break with Veggie Patty leading the charge. The pass is down deep to Goat Patty. Goat Patty passes baseline to Beef Patty. Beef Patty shoots from downtown at the buzzer. And bingo! It's in! It's in! Cara Patties wins the game and is now the world champions! The number one in Montreal. Come on down to 9550 Jean Milo in LaSalle for the best patties, roadies, jerk chicken, and more. Or call us at 438-387-4004. Cara Patties, the champions of Montreal.
déjà to you. Happy birthday to you. Joyeux anniversaire. Santé Musique Inter. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Joyeux anniversaire. Santé Musique Inter. Tout on a fêté. Non, c'est caïté. Tout on a fêté. Fêté. Tout on a fêté. 90.3. Sorti petit inter. Oh lolo. Ça fait la 30e fois. Non, la Montréal. Fêté. Non, c'est caïté. Yo lolo. Ça fait la 30e fois. Célébrer, Basile, fêter ou fêter, fêter n'a fêter, bien poudré, en nous célébrer, en nous célébrer, Jacques Lonchal, fêter ou fêter, fêter n'a fêter, Bob Joachim, en nous célébrer, en nous célébrer.